thank you so much for joining me today. I was on a little bit of a hiatus for the past 2 weeks, so I kind of have to get back into the swing of things. As I was explaining to the guys how this works, I was having difficulty remembering how to do everything because I haven't done it in such a long time. So thank you for joining. This is Hashtag No Limits, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know who we are, but not who we will be." And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into cells and then reforms to become the butterfly, but it's still not strong enough to fly. And that's why it's still in the cocoon and it has to fight to get out of the cocoon. I can't imagine that any of that is easy. And I imagine it honestly to be quite a struggle, but it's necessary in order for the beautiful butterfly to go all the places that it's supposed to go to and to soar above everything else in the world. And while that's not easy and it has a beautiful outcome, so often we see that same beauty when our members of our society are busting through those limits. And today I have two gentlemen, Cole and Mike from Mind's Eye Radio, and they're going to talk to us today about an adaptive sport. And I'm really excited because I watch this sport and I just get really involved in it and get really drawn into it. And so I hope that you as the audience will feel that way as well. For those of you who will only be listening to this as the podcast, you'll probably want to at least jump over to the YouTube video and watch the segments where I actually show some of the goal ball that we're going to talk about. So Cole and Mike, thank you very much for joining me today. Cole, go ahead and introduce yourself first, please.
Hello, I'm Cole Pecky. I'm the Adaptive Athletics Coordinator here at Mind's Eye Radio. I've been here for almost a year, and I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I'm Mike Curtis. I'm the Director of Special Initiatives at Mind's Eye. I've been with the organization for 8 years. Mind's Eye has three major programs, the Radio Reading Service, hence our full name of Mind's Eye Radio. But we also have a full-fledged audio description program, both live and recorded, and then our adaptive athletics program. I'm fortunate enough to oversee a lot of those.
Awesome. So, Mike, I'm going to put this question to you since you've been there the longer of the two of you. You gave a brief tidbit about Mind's Eye Radio, but can you kind of give the overall of all the services that are offered, or as many as you know about at least, and kind of what its purpose is, where it's located?
Yeah. Mind's Eye, we're actually located in Belleville, Illinois, but we serve the greater St. Louis area, so most of Missouri, as well as parts of central Illinois up towards Springfield, Illinois, and the central part of the state, pretty much anything south of the Chicago area. We have a footprint in. And then we started off with radio reading. What that is magazines and newspapers are read by volunteers, and that is broadcast out via numerous ways. When we started in 1973, it was via just SCA radio, which is a subcarrier of FM or AM. So it's not available through traditional radio or car stereo means. It's a specialized radio that we send out to qualified listeners who are blind, visually impaired, or print impaired. But now with modern technology, we're on our Mind's Eye Radio app, as well as our website, mindseyeradio.org, and thousands of other online digital platforms where you can tune into that. So that is what Mind's Eye was founded on. In 2016, Mind's Eye started doing audio description on a smaller scale at live events in St. Louis area. That program initially designed just to be for theaters. I think our first year we wanted to do 12 shows. We ended up doing close to 40. And then it kind of grew from there to where we're doing, I think, over 150 shows in 2024. And then we also do lots of recorded material. Megan Harms, who's our arts and culture coordinator, she's worked a lot of the institutions in St. Louis, the St. Louis History Museum, Art Museum, as well as the St. Louis Zoo and other art institutions, and getting permanent features of audio description for their patrons. And then also Mind's Eye used Beat Baseball, which is kind of where our adaptive athletics was kind of born from. I think our first tournament was in 2006. It was strictly a fundraising tournament, so local organizations corporations and friends of the station would get teams together, and those funds would go to supplement the broadcast side of things. We took that a step further in 2020 when we created the Gateway Archers, which is our nationally competing beat baseball team with the National Beat Baseball Association. We've been doing that for 4 years, competing on a national scale at regionals and the NBBA World Series, which happens every year. We've gotten so involved with beat baseball, our organization is actually hosting the National Beat Baseball Association World Series in 2024 and 2025 in St. Charles, Missouri. That's in partnership with Lighthouse for the Blind St. Louis. So it's a huge undertaking for our adaptive athletics department, as well as our organization as a whole. That's kind of what Cole was kind of hired on to help coordinate when we started expanding out our adaptive athletics program. And then the actual adaptive athletics program became a full-fledged program outside of beat baseball in the fall of 2022 when we noticed a need for the other adaptive athletics in our sports. We wanted to keep it primarily team focused because anybody who has a visual impairment, even if they go to a specialized school for the blind or visually impaired, after they graduate, team sports kind of goes away. There's still individual things they could do like running or swimming or weightlifting or fundamental fitness. But team sports is something that's really not accessible to a lot of folks after they graduate school. So we wanted to stick with that theme. Obviously the Gateway Archers beat baseball team is the pillar of that, but also Gateway Gold Ball. We started a competitive gold ball team in the winter of 2022. And then blind soccer is the other adaptive sport that we're looking to get into. It's one of the fastest growing adaptive sports on the Paralympic level. And then the U.S. is actually behind most of the rest of the world when it comes to soccer, just like anything else. They won't be competing at a Paralympic level until 2028 when it's hosted here in L.A.
Okay. Wow. So there is a lot going on. And for anyone who is interested, Megan Harms, who he mentioned, has actually been a guest, and she talked about the audio description and kind of how all of that works. So if you're interested in learning more about that, be sure to check her episode out. We did have several beatball players on in an episode, and so we showed some video clips, and they gave us a great episode on what it's like being a player and how it all works. And I'm actually hoping one of these times to become a volunteer. And on that note, are you looking for volunteers for the World Series this summer?
I'll let Cole take that one since he's heading up that department.
Okay.
Yes, we are. We actually just launched our volunteer platform this past week or the week before. So all the volunteer links are on our MAA page on Facebook. There you can sign up for all the job descriptions, time slots. They're all listed there.
All right. So tell me the kinds of things that you're looking for in people, just so that, you know, if somebody's thinking, oh, I'm not going to be able to help with that. I know that's not exactly what you're supposed to be on here talking about today, but I do want to put that out there because, you know, hopefully somebody will be listening and they want to go help you. So what kinds of jobs are there, and what experience or skills does the person volunteering for these jobs need?
So we have wellness runners. Those are just running back and forth to help people who are injured, get them water. We have people just to stand by the base because our bases, they're put in place. Sometimes they get knocked over by a player. Sometimes it's just their job to put it back in place. Just honestly, if you are able to just walk around and help players getting back and forth from the bench, that's something we can use as well.
Okay. So I'm going to quickly – I know you said it was on your Facebook page, but – oh, shoot. But there is also a spot, correct, to volunteer on the website. So I want to pull that up really quickly and just share that with everybody. So this is mindseyeradio.org. And then I think I went under Get Involved and under Volunteer. And then there was a specific link to go for adaptive athletics. So can they go to this part to volunteer, or do they have to go to the website? I mean, to the Facebook page?
No, it'll get you there either way. So if you go to the Facebook, okay, it'll redirect you to that direct page. Facebook's just, it's easier to find. As you mentioned, it's kind of buried under a few sub menus on our website, but even our website has all our athletic stuff. So everything is kind of navigatable, and it's an accessible website too. So if you have a vision issues, you should be able to find everything pretty easily with headers.
Okay. And while I'm here, I'm just going to pop over to your Facebook page. Or no, I'm not, because, oh, there we go. It is going to pull up for me. Okay. I had to clear my cache recently. Yep. And so everything wants me to log back in again. And so I didn't think it was going to show us. But yeah, so here's
that's our broadcast page for other stuff as well. You go for your athletics page, you're just going to type in MAA, so Mind's Eye Adaptive Athletics.
Oh, okay. I will search for that separately. I will take this off for a minute while I do all of that fun stuff.
With, moving forth our Adaptive Athletics page, our demographics are wildly different from when we originally started. Obviously, with the broadcast side of things, a lot of that is geared towards the elderly who lost their vision later in life, probably not big social media users. And then the arts thing of audio description, and then the athletic side of thing, there are crossovers with some of those individuals, but we didn't want to have just our regular Facebook page inundated with athletics and bombarded people with that. So we created a separate one. Just so where that kind of stuff can live, and those people who are interested in those athletics have an easier way to find it rather than having to go through some of the things they may not care about.
Right. Absolutely. I appreciate that. So Fran wants to know, do you have to be able-bodied to volunteer?
So we do have some blind volunteers for the World Series, able-bodied. We do have a job where you're just operating the bases, so you're just flipping a base switch back and forth. That's where we kind of have people who have some sort of physical disability, or just if they're visually impaired also. So that's kind of the job that main people will do if they have some sort of disability going on.
Okay, perfect. All right, so that was for beat ball. So getting back to goal ball. So tell us a little bit, and I don't know which one of you to address this question to. I'm thinking Cole, but I might be wrong. So which one of you wants to talk about goal ball and exactly what that is?
Actually, I can talk about it since I'm kind of the one that kind of started that one.
Yeah, it's kind of the
okay. So, anybody who's unaware, goal ball is the only sport that was not adapted. It was created for those who are blind or visually impaired. It's one of the biggest Paralympic sports, played in, I think, over 110 countries. The idea of goal ball is very simple. It was actually created for World War II vets, as something that those lost their sight during war that, kind of do something to pass the time. So it's a team sport, usually 3-on-3, in a recreational setting, you could use more or less. And then it is played with a ball that is about the size of a basketball, weighs a little bit more, has some bells embedded within it. So it makes a jingling sound when you ring it. It is played primarily indoors on a basketball or volleyball style court. At the end zones of each team is a big net. It's about 4 feet tall in the width of the playing surface. The idea is the offensive team is to roll that ball or throw it, never kick it. And there's specific lines where it has to hit the ground before and try to get it into the defending team's net. The defense uses their body to absorb the hits and deflect it either out of bounds or to corral it so they can go on the offense and throw it back. It sounds easy enough, and it can be if you're just rolling a ball back and forth, but when you get on the national scale of goal ball, it is quite intense, competitive, and exhilarating, as well as takes physical fitness to do because you're constantly getting up and down, expelling energy that way. So Mind's Eye wanted to start a goal ball team in partnership with Missouri School for the Blind. There were some student athletes there that wanted to take it a little bit further outside of their school curriculum, as well as other individuals who are either a part of the Archers or in the St. Louis community wanting to play goal ball. There really hasn't been a footprint of a goal ball team or program in St. Louis for quite some time. And that was an opportunity that we thought we could champion and move forward with. So in 2022, when we expanded the adaptive athletics program, goalball was one of the first things we started doing, practicing and having a program at MSB to where the student body there, anybody that wanted to come in and play, as well as people outside the school if they wanted to come in and play goalball. We formed a team with four players that winter. We went and competed at a few regionals in 2023. And competed at nationals in 2023 as well. In 2024, we realized we not necessarily overstepped, but we kind of rushed into doing goal ball. We wanted to treat it the same level as we did our Gateway Archers program, which is a good thing because it's very ambitious. But we realized we probably need to create a more solid footprint in a grassroots program here in St. Louis before we start doing things more on a national scale the way that we like to. So now we're just doing adaptive athletic days to where anybody can come try goal ball as well as blind soccer, and then starting a program at MSB later this winter to build up those skills to, again, create a competitive team to compete on a national scale the next 2 years with the NBBA World Series being in St. Louis. A lot of our athletic efforts are being put towards that to make those events successful.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So what I would like to do now, if it's okay, is I've got a video pulled up of, it looks like the women's USA goal ball from, I think it's 2 years ago, it says. So that it says they're making an incredible comeback. So I want to go ahead and share that video with everybody just so they get even a clearer idea of what you're talking about. I feel like you did a great job describing what happens, but I understand things better if I see them. So I'm going to go ahead and share this now. At least I hope so. So I want to just talk briefly because I had watched another sort of description. So these pieces of tape that are all on the floor, can you explain what their purpose is?
Yeah, each zone is around 3 meters in length across the court. So each side of the court is essentially divided into thirds. You have your player orientation zone that's where most of the players are, and they have to be behind that line. And the lines on the ground are also tactile. So it's a raised surface. So everybody is wearing a blindfold. So obviously they're not going to be able to see those lines. When you're on defense, primarily, you're using the ground and your hands to coordinate yourself to get in your position. So there's two wingers, one on each side and then one in the center. They're usually lining up to be in the best position to stop the opposition. So after finding the orientation on the ground using those raised levels, if they block the ball, the next zone is your landing zone. So after the ball is thrown, it has to hit the ground before it crosses that second line there. And then the middle
it
zone
comes right here.
Yep. So it has to hit the ground before that line. And then the next line is just the neutral zone. And then it flips to the other side. So a neutral zone for the opposition, their landing zone, and their team orientation zone. Earlier in the clip, you saw one of the U.S. players before they threw it. They were walking along the net. So what they what she was doing there was orienting herself of where to throw it. So they use the net as a guideline to make sure they're square up to the other side of the court, so that way they have a better chance of keeping the ball inbounds when they throw it. So everything is done by obviously sound, but also touch and feel. There you can see her hand on there. So she's orienting herself to prepare to throw the ball to try to find a weakness in the defense, which is usually in between the center and wings or down the lines where there's kind of holes, which when she scored that previous goal, it was in between the center and the winger, between their, her arms and the winger's legs. So, obviously at this level, these guys are the utmost professionals and know exactly what they're doing and very precise. So, it is an incredible thing to watch.
Yeah. I mean, to be able to, have this, you know, not know exactly where she's throwing, but to have it, you know, cause I think she's standing right here, you know, mm-hmm. and to have it just roll right past there. And then, the second time, oh, that was the second goal, I guess. So I'm going to go back to a little bit further than, okay. So, cause the, so the way that I had seen in the game that I had watched, and in this one, when the person from the USA throws it, is very different than the person from Brazil throws it. So I'm hoping that this will show me or show the audience here how the people from Brazil. So is there, so my yeah. question is, because she threw it like, you know, backwards and underneath or in between her legs, are there, I presume, different strategies, and what's the benefit of each one, or why do you think maybe one threw it the one way and the other one throws them overhand or underhand?
Yep. So yeah, now we're getting to the weeds of goal ball. So the basics of it are very simple, but yeah, when you get to this level, there's different ways you have to use your advantage to score. So the USA team, whenever she threw hers underhanded, she's going for speed. So she just want to throw it and get it as hard as possible. A science lesson. If you can throw it the right way, the bells will spin along the inside of the rim of the ball, which means they won't make any noise at all. So the longer you can keep that inertia up, the less time the defense has to track the sound of the bells. They're all really just going off the sound of the ball hitting the ground. So obviously the faster you throw it, the less time they have to react. And then on Brazil's side of the thing, they were going for more of a bounce ball. So the more that ball bounces, the more unpredictable it is when it actually hits somebody. So if it's hitting a person at a different angle, it could bounce right in front of where they think it's going to be and maybe bounce over their legs and then get into the net that way. But that's why you also have multiple levels of defense. So sometimes a defender will call out. So say if it's one of the wingers and they say it's coming to them, they may come upwards and then the center will come to get behind them to provide a, an additional level of defense. So yeah, there's plenty of strategy when throwing a ball in a multitude of different ways to get it to score. One of the more least common ones, but it's very effective, is what I call the slow spin, where you'll actually lay the ball on the ground, you'll spin it, and it's the slowest moving ball, but it makes absolutely no noise. So the defense is kind of just there laying still until it hopefully hits them. But I've seen goals get scored that way as well.
Wow. Okay. And in this video clip, I mean, I believe that they have, you know, they've taken just the highlights, because while this is still a 5-minute video, I feel like there's time elapsed, because all of a sudden it'll say, oh, that's the end of the first extended time or the overtime. And so the game that I watched, well, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched it for about 20 minutes and there was no score, because both sides were able to defend so well that nothing was getting passed. So I'm going to go ahead and we'll play this for a little bit more. Oops. So I do believe that it, because it says USA made an incredible comeback, I'm guessing that they won. I'm not going to show the whole thing. But yeah. So hopefully that gives the audience, you know, an idea of what goal ball looks like. Like you said, at, you know, a very high competitive level. It's just very fascinating to me. And I so appreciate what you said about the athleticism that is needed to play this, because, well, first of all, I'm not young. And so that's part of why I'm not this athletic. But Cole, you were a football player. So have you played goal ball? And if so, how does that compare to the athleticism that you need for football?
No, I can't say I've played goal ball before, but I can say I can appreciate the just the physical shape that they're in. It's a very back and forth sport. We see pretty commonly during the middle of a game, there'll be timeouts called just because they need a breather. I mean, it's a very back and forth sport. They're throwing side to side, getting back on their knees, diving for balls, getting hit by balls. So it's a very strenuous and physical sport from that standpoint. So that I can really appreciate from football. You're going really hard for 6 seconds and then you got a break for about another 60 seconds. So that part I can appreciate from goal ball, just the amount of physical pressure they're put under.
Yeah, and forgive me, I don't know if either I read this or you actually said it or both, but there is like a shot clock when you're playing this, correct? And what's that
time? Yeah, so when you're on the defensive side of things, as soon as that ball hits you, you have 10 seconds to then throw it back. That doesn't count if you hit it out of bounds. So say if I stop a ball, it hits me, but it takes 3 seconds to get out of bounds. When they drop that ball in play for us to throw it back, we then only have 7 seconds, since 3 seconds kind of came off the clock from we initially stopped it. And then hassle range, depending on what level you're at, I believe on the blind school circuit, halves are 8 to 10 minutes. And then on the national circuit, it's 10 minutes. But when you, I think on the Paralympic level, it's 12 minutes per half. So there's two halves. And then after you get past the overtime, in that video, I believe that they go to shootouts, which is essentially just one-on-one, just like in soccer, where you have an offensive player kicking to the 1%, you only have one person defending and you're alternating throws.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, I find it very fascinating and very exciting and very intense, as we just mentioned, you know, just the level of fitness that the players at this level have to have. So you were saying that your players aren't quite there yet, because you still have a fairly new program. And I did want to pull up, let's see. So that was the volunteer. So let me go here. I'm trying to get to your, yeah. So I just want to share the website again for your goal ball program. So how many people, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say the photo that's at the top there was at the – we had an event and that was put on by New View, Oklahoma. Those are the gentlemen in the black and red jerseys. They hosted a tournament for us where our team, pictured there is Liam, Caleb, and Braxton, got to compete. So Caleb and Braxton are students of Missouri School for the Blind and play for their team. And this was an extension of that. Liam – is involved in all three of our programs. He's a part of the Gateway Archers Beat Baseball program, the goal ball team, and then our blind soccer program. He's one of the few individuals on that team as well.
Okay. So when people play goal ball, whether they are with your program or with the program that we saw before with the USA and Brazil, everybody has to wear the mask. So
correct.
Myself, you know, I wear glasses, but I mean, I'm not, you know, my vision isn't legally blind. So are people like myself or like either of you who are not wearing glasses, are you eligible because you have to wear the mask, or is there a significant or not, I'm sorry, not a significant, a level of vision that you have to be before you can play?
Yeah, to compete in USABA's regional or national sanctioned tournaments, you have to be legally blind. You could be a B3 athlete, which I think is 2070. I might be wrong on that one, or worse in your best eye. And then all the way up to B1, which is a total blindness. So you do have to be legally blind to be able to play the sport. Each state has a different definition of that. But the blindfold is worn to even the playing field. So those who are B3 athletes are on the same playing field as total athletes. I think there is a rule for those tournaments that if due to injury, a sighted player can play to field a team. Most rosters have at least three players, since that's what you're given at any given point. You're allowed up to six, so you can rotate people out on your bench. And then on the national team, I believe they have eight, so they have two alternates in case somebody can't go on a specific trip or a specific tournament, either due to injury or other aspects of life. So, yeah, in an emergency basis, I believe someone who has normal vision or not legally blind can compete to finish the game.
Okay. And do you ever, I know with the beatball, there are the fundraising opportunities for people like myself to come out and participate, but it's for fun. So yeah. Are you having anything like that, or is that in the works to have down the road for goalball?
Yeah, with our adaptive sports days, that's one way to get the community out. So again, if anybody of any vision, acuity or ability can come out and try those things. We do want to kind of use goalballs a fundraiser in the future, kind of with our recreational tournaments. It's a little bit more involved. Beat baseball is, I don't want to say easier to do, but most people who come out to that at least have an idea of what baseball is, and can swing a bat and put on a blindfold. Goalball, again, with the athletes that have that, they're still wearing pads. So elbow pads, knee pads, you are playing on a hard surface. Some players also wear chest pads and thigh pads as well as other protection. So doing a recreational goalball tournament, there's a lot more involved with it of gearing people up to be prepared for, because obviously you want to protect people from injury as much as possible, but you also don't want to tell the other team, don't throw it very hard because the other team's not fully protected. Right. So there's some logistics to work out if we were to do a recreational goalball tournament. But I think that is something that we probably want to do in the future.
Yeah. I just had an idea of to get more involved and more interest, because like with goalball, I understand, I mean, in all the sports, I understand that they have audiences, but in beatball and goalball, the audience has to be quiet. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. During play. The umpires will say, quiet, please silence your cell phones. After a goal is scored, you're able to cheer and things like that, or run and beat baseball. But yeah, as when play is going on, the crowd needs to be silent, which anybody who's never attended a game like that in person, it's shocking, because the first thing you want to do when a good play is made is cheer as loud as possible, but you got to refrain yourself a little bit from that.
Yeah. The reason I kind of sidestepped there is because the thought that I had was like you going out and doing demonstrations at schools. But then I was like, you're never going to get kids to be quiet. They might be quiet when you say quiet, please. But then, like you said, when there's a good play made, they're not going to be able to hold themselves quiet probably.
Yeah. And then demonstrations are something we do primarily with our beat baseball program. We actually just did probably three within the last 2 weeks. I just did an elementary school this past Friday, and I did a children's vision summit in Jefferson City on Saturday. The elementary schools are always fun because you do have to teach them, and they say they get it, but then when things start getting hectic and their friend makes a hit, everybody starts cheering when they're supposed to be quiet. So it's definitely a learning experience, but demonstrations and educating the general public about adaptive sports is one of the aspects of running this program. I think is the most important, as important as the athletes who get to play them and the opportunity to do team sports for the visually impaired athletes. Me getting to teach other people about these sports is just as enjoyable.
Yeah. So Cole, you've not had a lot to say. So tell us, you know, more about what your role is exactly and like how you're incorporating everything about all these adaptive sports.
So my job is really just to handle the on-field logistics as well as helping with the volunteer efforts. I've also done some demonstrations as well. We just had a beatball demo with Delta Gamma Center, which is a low vision center for young children. So I've been doing that and just kind of helping the volunteer efforts for the World Series, helping the on-field logistics rep event, make sure it runs smoothly. Just assisting Mike and Jason with anything they need.
And Jason would be Jason Frazier?
Correct.
Okay. He was also on. so I must really appreciate what you're doing, because I keep having different people from your organization on. But and it's true. I really do. I really appreciate all the different opportunities that you are offering. And I think it must be, as you just said, you went to, you know, you've been to some elementary schools and you went to the primary centers. It has to be, I think, encouraging for people with low vision or legally blind or totally blind to know that these kind of opportunities are out there. What sort of feedback have you gotten from when you've gone out and done these presentations, or from just society at large?
Well, I think it's important because some of these kids, they just now realize at a young age that their vision is low and they can't participate in all these other sports that their friends are participating in. So just giving them the outlet that they can participate in team sports and that there is something for them to do, not just sit at home and be sad they can't participate in sports like their friends can.
Yeah. Mike, do you have something to add to that? You just kind of look like you wanted to say something. So if you don't.
Yeah. I just have examples now, especially recently. Even those who are visually impaired, so we do our demonstrations and our program at Missouri School for the Blind. There are kids that go to that school that have other disabilities besides their vision impairment that they can't play competitive goalball even just because of their visual impairment, because of other disabilities. Even our program, they can at least try it out and do stuff that their friends that even go to that the School for the Blind do that they're not able to. So even on that scale of helping those individuals do something that they don't normally get to do, is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is very exciting to see, you know, the joy come out of somebody when they realize, like, oh, I can do, you know, some other things. And I will be honest, I think that's probably why I keep coming back to your organization, because all the innovative things that you're doing. I mean, I the name of this is #NoLimits, because I don't want people setting mental limits upon somebody else of what their potential could be or the things that they might be able to do. And I can't remember if I had the St. Louis Blues Blind Hockey League first or if it was someone from your organization first. But either way, all of the things that both organizations are doing, I had placed those limits without realizing that I had done that. Like, oh, well, yeah, if you're blind, no, you're not going to be able to play baseball or play soccer. I'm really curious, and I hope you don't mind if we kind of pivot a little bit here in a few minutes to the blind soccer, because I am interested in learning more about that. But I mean, it's just it's incredible all the things that we are able to do. And when it comes to vision impairment, that's the largest disability category for the entire world's population. Is that correct? Do you know that for certain?
I can't say that for certain, but that sounds right.
I thought someone else had told me that I don't remember if it was your organization.
Sounds about right.
And then I thought too that someone had told me, and maybe this number is about all disabilities, but it's something like 80% of the people with disabilities, it's not that they were born with that disability. And maybe it is specifically vision. I can't remember now, but I feel like it was definitely 80%. And so, you know, for all of us who are not living with a disability at this moment, that doesn't mean that next week, next year, 10 years from now, we're not going to be someone with a disability. And so to have all these different programs available and to know that there are constantly things being thought up, invented, science breakthroughs, medical breakthroughs and technologies, that's so exciting to me to know that we really, this #NoLimits idea is even much larger than I thought when I came up with the idea. And so I so very much appreciate everything that you guys are doing and everyone at Mind's Eye, but just in general, the things that are happening. And Fran says, for sure, a life changes in a moment. So is there anything else about goalball? And then I want to switch over to blind soccer.
No, not that I can think of right now. I mean, goalball is, it's in a weird place in the U.S. Even with the short time that we've kind of been involved in that landscape, it seems like it's taken a small step backwards. There are less regional tournaments than there were the previous year. And then nationals is still something that's happening. But it could be that USABA, which is the United States Association of Blind Athletes, they're the ones that organize the U.S. competing teams for the Paralympics, goalball, blind soccer, as well as other sports. So those Paralympics are coming up this summer. So it could be that their focus is more towards that. But all the regionals, it goes for beat baseball as well. They're not hosted by the organization. So USABA doesn't host these events. They're hosted by organizations like Mind's Eye or City Bureaus or something like that. And then the USABA will send their officiating crew to make it an official USABA sanctioned tournament to qualify yourself for nationals. But there is, I know for sure, one less regional this year, which we used to compete in the Star Spangled goalball tournament, which is in Nashville. We competed in that as our regional last year because you have to compete in a regional to qualify for nationals. So any regionals, they're usually on for the Midwest. That was the premier one because it's drivable for most of the places in the Midwest. The other one kind of on the coast of New Jersey, down in Georgia. I think there's one in Washington and one in Arizona. So I think those were the only four regionals happening this year to qualify for nationals. So if a team didn't go to one of those regionals, then you couldn't compete at nationals. So kind of a step back in that way. But I think most teams are combining, or if you have individual players who want to play for certain teams, they're just combining and making their own team to qualify for those things. So goalball, again, since it's the biggest sport for those who are blind or visually impaired, it's always going to be a foundation. But the fact that there are other sports that are growing, like beat baseball and blind soccer, some of the higher tier athletes may venture off into other sports.
Okay. So one of the and I'm going to assume that this is going to happen with blind soccer, but one of the common threads between all the sports is that the ball makes some kind of noise. So with goalball, it was a bell. With beatball, it beeps. So what does it do in soccer?
So soccer, it's the same size as a soccer ball, but inside either 6 or 8 of the little patches on the outside of it, it has rattles in there. So some of those have pockets of steel ball bearings, so it makes a rattling noise more than a jingling noise like a goal ball or a mechanical beep like a beat baseball. So a little bit quieter than the other two, but still well enough to make plenty of noise if you're kicking it around. Do you want me to go into more detail about how blind soccer works?
Yep, might as well.
Yeah. So blind soccer's or they're called is five-a-side soccer. So it's 5-on-5, discounting the goalkeeper. So technically it's 4-on-4. So it's played on a much smaller scale field. And then it is also played with boards on the side walls. They do that, one, to keep the ball in bounds more. It is open at the goalkeeper's ends, so it can get kicked out of bounds there. But goalball, as well as beat baseball, requires sighted assistance. So the goalkeepers are sighted players, and then you also have a sighted offensive coach who is behind the opponent's net to kind of give indication on kind of where to kick the ball and kind of move up and down the field. And then you have your midfield coach, which is usually like your head coach, shouting directions to the players from the sidelines. So all these players, you have 4-on-4 players, you have your two coaches, you have a goalkeeper, defensive coach. It is the loudest sport for those who are visually impaired and using their ears that I've ever played with. It is also probably the most physical sport that I've seen. As much as we talked about physicality of goalball, that's more of individual physicality, whereas this one, you're It's almost like a mixture of hockey where you're body checking people and using the boards and your momentum and inertia and body weight and muscle to physically get the ball around individuals, as well as the athleticism to dribble around them and kick the ball into the net. So it's a, again, very competitive, smaller on the national scale. I think there's only 40 teams that compete right now, but that number is growing significantly.
So, Cole, how do you participate with the blind soccer at this point, or are you able to?
I'm not able to currently. I'm more focused on the beat ball and goal ball aspects of our organization. Our blind soccer sector kind of is fairly new, and when I say fairly new, it's very new. we're developing it. We currently have a blind soccer player on our beatball team, so we're kind of just going to take that and kind of run with it.
So I think if I understood your role correctly earlier, so you're getting the fields ready, you're getting the player, I mean the volunteers, you're getting kind of more of the logistical stuff together. So this is sort of a all three sports question, I guess, for you. So we talked about a little of the equipment for goal ball, but what do you need for the other? I mean, and we did kind of, Mike just a little bit explained it for the soccer. What do you need for the beat ball, and what do you specifically have to do in your role to get everybody ready, volunteers and players?
So player-wise, they are pretty well learned on what to do to get ready for a game. Volunteer-wise, we just need most people who are volunteering, they've never seen beat ball before. They don't really know how it works. So getting them up to speed on what the rules are, not to make any noise during the game, and just kind of general housekeeping things. But otherwise, there's not really any crazy issues with volunteers.
So when, like, for the beatball World Series this summer, going back to that, so the volunteers, can they just show up on the day? Is there training ahead of time? How does that work?
No, they can show up right before the game starts. There's not any crazy training to do beforehand. All the job descriptions are listed on the volunteer page. So as long as they read through that and make sure they thoroughly understand what their job is, there shouldn't be any huge issues.
Okay. As far as beatball, what's better, AstroTurf or natural?
Natural. I would say natural grass is probably the best because AstroTurf, okay, the ball will just roll forever. I mean, players don't really love playing on it just because – also, that you're on your feet, you're on your, you know, your dive on your side, so you're the turf runner aspect. So definitely the popular answer is going to be natural grass.
Okay. All right. That's about all I know as far as, like, fields. Those are the two options. I don't even know if those are the only options. But,
yeah. We don't play on, like, regular dirt diamonds or anything like that since it does involve a lot of diving. Yeah, with AstroTurf, it's been played for, but like Cole mentioned, if you hit the ball, it'll just keep rolling forever, which if you're the person hitting the ball, you want that, playing defense, not so much. There is somewhat of a home field advantage for teams in the South. Obviously, the grass doesn't grow as thick there as it does in the Midwest or the Northeast parts of the Northeast parts of the United States. So some of the fields down in Texas and Oklahoma where we play, seems like you're playing on turf because there's really, the grass is almost non-existent to begin with. So, those Texas teams and Southern teams have an advantage when it comes to that. But most of the players in the league have played on a variety of different surfaces. So, the fields that we'll be at for the World Series that we're hosting at the St. Luthiers Soccer Association complex, I've been told by many players that played on it when we had our regional last year that it's by far the best grass that they've ever played on. And that's some people that have been playing for 20 or 30 years. So we'll have a great playing surface here in St. Louis. So that's fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, guys, it's like we've been together for almost an hour, and I so appreciate everything that you have both already shared. But I want to make sure, you know, if there's anything that you were hoping to share today and you haven't had opportunity to do that, or if, you know, something has triggered and you're like, oh, I want to talk about this really quick. Now is the opportunity to dive into those areas.
Yeah, I can't think of anything in particular. I feel like we covered a very wide range of topics.
Yeah. So, for athletics, following us on our Facebook page, Mind's Eye Adaptive Athletics, is probably the best way to keep up with the things that we're doing. There you'll be able to find events that we have coming up in the St. Louis area that we'll be either taking part in or hosting, as well as any live streams from games that we're competing in. So the Gateway Archers will be competing in the Sooner State Invitational, which is a beat baseball tournament in Norman, Oklahoma this weekend. So the games that we'll be playing will be streamed there. So if anybody wants to watch / listen to beat baseball, that'll be a good place to go, as well as our YouTube channel, which is just Mind's Eye Adaptive Athletics as well. So that's probably the best place to keep up with current things. Obviously, our website, mindseyeradio.org, will have events listed there as well, more so for the recreational side of things. So when we have our Ultimate Beat Baseball Tournament, our fundraising tournament this fall, sign-ups and information will be that as well.
So our Facebook page, this Facebook page as well, this is where you can find the volunteer link for the World Series. Just kind of keeping up to date on what we're doing for our beat baseball team leading up to the World Series. And you can just kind of keep up to date with all our demos we've been doing around the St. Louis area.
And that's on this page that I'm on right now?
Correct.
Awesome. So here's a little bit of beat baseball.
So that's actually, So that's at Drummond Elementary School that I was at this past Friday. Their media team came in, did an interview about it. It was very cold outside, so we played inside their gymnasium rather than having all the kids trying to be out in 45 degree weather for 2 hours.
Yeah, that's probably a smart idea. And so I did just kind of want to point out that the first batter ran over here, and then the second batter, well, I don't know if it was the second batter, but the second one in this video ran to the other side. And so it's not always, just as a reminder, it's not always that you go first base, second base, third base. There is no second base, correct?
Correct.
And so, yeah, sometime, and it depends on the sound as to once you hit the ball, you have to listen for the sound to know whether you're supposed to run towards first or third. Is that right?
Correct. That is where the base the base operator will just flip a switch, they'll lower your foot first or third base, and that'll sound the bases off.
So how did the kids react? Sorry, I hadn't seen this video before. Now I'm curious. So how did the kids react to this whole activity? It looks like they're happy.
So the kid that's on screen right now, his name is Kyle. So he's actually a visually impaired student, and that lady in the jean jacket is his mom. Obviously him being visually impaired, he doesn't get to partake in a lot of different PE events. So their school asked us to come kind of flip the script on the student body. So where he's the expert in using his ears to compete, and all the other kids had to adapt a sport that he was wanting to play. But yeah, they were excited. So how we mentioned earlier of you want as much quiet as possible when somebody hits the ball so everybody can kind of hear what's going on. That didn't happen. But it's also part of the fun. So it's an educational thing, but it's kind of hard to tell a kid to not be excited when something fun happens. But yeah, that demonstration. So I think that was a third grade class. So we've run the gamut on demonstrations. So we've done as young as 3, 4, and 5 in beginning elementary school. And then also obviously universities, St. Louis University, Webster University, Lindenwood University here in St. Louis. We all have good partnerships and usually do a demonstration there once a year for most of those schools. And then also there's a photo on the left, the Battle for Illinois we actually have coming up on May 18th against the Chicago Comets. So that'll actually be in Springfield, Illinois, which is kind of like that. Yeah, that's kind of the halfway point in between Gateway and Chicago. So we're kind of bringing beat baseball to the middle of the state, and we have a little trophy that we do, and creating a friendly rivalry. We're very good partners with Chicago Comets and their leadership and their team. So it's always good to bring beat baseball to other parts of the areas that we serve.
Yeah, and I actually, you always do it around the same time of the year. And I think it was last year or 2 years ago, I thought I was going to make it up there. And because my daughter was moving into the area, and I was like, oh, this will be great. I'll help her move, and then I'll pop over and I'll watch the game. And then that didn't happen. And so,
yeah,
but hopefully, because yeah, I would love to see this in person. And like I said, if, maybe I'll be able to manage to volunteer, this summer for what you have going on with the World Series and beatball. And, yeah, cause I do, I've always been a baseball fan. And so beat baseball just kind of falls right into my wheelhouse. But like I said, the goal ball is just very fascinating to me. And at first when I started watching it, I thought, oh, this isn't like super exciting, but boy, I got wrapped in it really quick.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me today and for giving up your time today. And just for everything that you're doing with beatball and goalball and blind soccer and just everything at Mind's Eye. I mean, it really, Mind's Eye Radio is such a great organization. And I hope that, you know, this is able to get more people aware of what you all are doing there and, you know, give more people that joy of being able to access things that they didn't know they could access or to participate in sports when they didn't know they could. So thank you guys so much again. And I will see you all next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.